And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Tuesday with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, we break down Game 5 of the NBA Finals, why this series is already over, and how we got here. The big star of last night and the big piece missing for Jason Tatum. Plus, we'll power rank the best quarterbacks in the NFC. Where would Baker Mayfield slot in? Five things that need to be done or figured out before the start of the NFL season. Also, which team could potentially end Clemson's home winning streak this year? We'll get to our Tuesday top 10 later on. Which teams, or I should say, which people will be the most impactful on college football this year and their national champion? And we'll also do a little taste test. It's time to find our new healthy alternative cola, and we'll do it just over an hour from now. We'll try out what is being called the new Coca-Cola. All that and a whole lot more throughout the afternoon. Wait until 3 on this Tuesday. You can join the conversation throughout. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays, on Facebook, at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio, at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online, at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head over there and click on our show page, where you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3, Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I'm doing great on this taste test Tuesday. Right. I'm a little nervy, a little excited for this taste test we're doing in about an hour from now, but what a great Game 5 last night in San Francisco. Absolutely phenomenal. Been catching up on my shows as well. It's a beautiful Tuesday here on the Morrow Midday Show. Luke, I'm glad to be with you, kind sir.
Likewise. Have you finished Peaky Blinders already?
I'm on last episode. Wow. Last episode. We're getting there, Luke, and I'll get into it later, but you need to tune in, pal. I think it's time we turn the clock and you get on the train with the Peaky Blinders.
All right. We'll see. I mean, soon the NBA is going to be done with this week. I'm going to have a lot more free TV time. Maybe Peaky Blinders will fill that void. Let me start with this. Well, last night's NBA Finals Game 5, this series is over. Even if the Warriors lose Game 6, they're not going to lose Game 7 at home. They're not losing the next two. And it was put away last night by, of all people, Andrew Wiggins, who played fantastically. And he was the big star. And he's been great these last couple of games in this NBA Finals. And he's done a little bit of everything. Right? If Steph Curry was not as good as he is, if Wiggins played this well for the entirety of the series, we could be having a pretty good debate right now about the true MVP of the NBA Finals. He plays good defense. He's done a great job on the boards the last couple of games. And then, of course, the scoring and the impactful scoring. He was great in the first quarter to set the tone. And then when it seemed like the Celtics may be creeping back in the fourth quarter, they cut it to 7, about 7 minutes ago. It was Wiggins that came down and got back-to-back baskets. Wiggins was the best player on the floor last night in a big win for the Warriors, right? Game 5, the big swing game. And it was Wiggins that led the way. Allen Hahn was on Get Up this morning talking about how Wiggins has done this, right? Used to be viewed as a bust as the first overall pick. Now, a bit of a star in the NBA Finals on the biggest stage with the Warriors. Here is Allen Hahn this morning.
It's a maturity in his game now because him understanding that it's not just about how many points you get and your shots and all those things, but actually he had to adjust even more this year when Klay came back and then Steph was playing full time.
Yes.
Because he had been used to being more of a focal point, especially that first year when everybody was hurt. And now the harder part is understanding how you could still impact the game and affect the game without being the primary and even the secondary a lot of times. He's had to adjust his game, and that's coaching, that's buy-in. And buy-in happens when you're in a place where you trust what's going on around you, when you've seen the impact that that kind of coaching and development has had on other players, and you say to yourself, I want to be part of this. And that's exactly what he's done. And he has emerged throughout this playoffs to this point now. So this is almost like the pinnacle of really where he has or where they have seen him go. So now, can they finish the job? Can he raise a trophy? Can he be a big part of a championship team? He goes from a guy that some people thought might have been a number one pick who is a bit spoiled and overpaid to a guy that is a champion. He's one game away.
Yeah, and in large part because of his own performance. Last night led the Warriors in minutes, in points, in rebounds. He was the best guy on the floor, made some huge buckets. I think what Allen Hahn is saying, right, is accurate. I also think part of it was almost like a misplaced asset, where he's better in this role with Golden State or better on this team. In football, I talk so much about fits, especially with quarterbacks. It's all about the fit. You have to go to a good organization that knows what they're doing, have enough talent around you. Otherwise, your career may never be the same. And to use a football comparison, Wiggins is like one of those guys you see oftentimes teams will overspend to believe they could be a number one wide receiver. The Jets did it last year with Corey Davis. He was a pretty good two in Tennessee. The Jets gave him all sorts of money and said he could come be our star. And he didn't have a great year. And Zach Wilson still needs that star. The Jaguars are trying it with their entire wide receiving core. They paid a bunch of twos and threes as if they're number ones to try to give Trevor Lawrence some help. And when you count on guys like that, right, there's a big difference between being that star receiver that commands a double team and still is very productive, or the other guy who, well, because that guy's being double teamed, they can now step up and play well. Or they're a good slot receiver, but they can't play out wide and so on and so forth. Some guys are number one wide receivers. Some guys are number two. Some guys can do both. Andrew Wiggins was asked to be a number one in Minnesota, and it wasn't great. In Golden State, he could be a number two, even at times a number three, on a very good team, and he has really played really well. He's looked like that part of that number one pick all those years ago. I also think the Warriors deserve a lot of credit, of course, for their development. They did the same thing with Draymond, with Klay, with Steph Curry, now Wiggins joining them. They did it back with even like a Livingston and a anybody. Right, you plug them into Golden State, and whether it's the system, it's the culture, it's the talent around them, everybody seems to get better when they go to the Warriors. Right, the Warriors, their expression has always been, back when they were winning multiple championships, they would always say strength in numbers. And they would wear the T-shirts that said strength in numbers. And you'd have like Zaza Pachulia wearing a strength in numbers, right? Because it was everybody chipping in and doing their part. And we saw that last night, that when Steph Curry was, quite frankly, awful, Wiggins stepped up. And Klay Thompson played well. And even Jordan Poole had some big threes in the second half. And other guys did their part. Like years ago when, yes, they had a Kevin Durant and they had a Draymond and they had Klay and Steph Curry all in their prime and healthy. But you always got contributions from Barnes and from a Livingston and from a Pachulia and obviously a Andre Iguodala. Other guys filling those roles. Now, earlier this postseason, we thought Jordan Poole was kind of like the Kevin Durant. Poole hasn't been as good in the finals, but Wiggins has. Wiggins is kind of playing the role of a Kevin Durant in this NBA Finals, specifically these last two games, and that's what has made Golden State so tough to beat. And I didn't think the Warriors could win a game like that last night. I actually thought that Golden State had the smaller margin of error in this series between these two teams. Because I thought Golden State, if you don't get a good game from Curry, I didn't think they could win. And last night, they won when Steph Curry was horrendous, did not make a three-pointer for the first time in 4 years. Right, if you told me going in, Steph Curry is going to go 0-for-9 from beyond the arc and make less than a third of his shots, and one of these teams is going to win by 10, who do you think it would be? I would tell you, yeah, probably the Celtics. I would bet that the Celtics would be a 10-point winner if Steph Curry doesn't make a three-pointer and shoots 30% from the floor last night. And if you also told me, without providing any other context, right, Tatum scores 27, Marcus Smart scores 20, I'd say, yeah, that sounds like a Celtics win. They lost by 10. In the biggest game of the year. It's impressive that the Warriors could win without Steph Curry and without their threes. If you take away Klay Thompson and Jordan Poole last night, the rest of the team went 1-for-23 from beyond the arc. They went through a stretch there where they missed 14 straight, and they still won. We like to think of the Warriors that they're just a three-point shooting team. No, not necessarily. When the Celtics went small last night, Golden State was able to get to the rim. And it was like a football team. You know, like, let's look right here in our backyard. The Citadel, obviously, they're an option football team. They run the football. But it'd be like if the Citadel went into your building. Well, this was in Golden State. So let's say you came here to play the Citadel, and they beat you by throwing it 30 times. You'd be like, whoa, we didn't see that coming. We didn't think they had that in them. That was like Golden State last night. Klay Thompson shot it well from beyond the arc. Poole had a couple of threes, including that buzzer beater at the end of the third. The rest of the team was 1-for-23. They still won by double digits in the finals. And again, it'd be like the Citadel running for 2 yards per carry, but they threw it for 300 yards on you. It's like, wow, I didn't think they could do that. I didn't think the Warriors could win a game like that last night when Curry was so bad and they weren't shooting it well. And Steph Curry seemed a little rattled. I know Alan Hahn this morning was saying because he had a split fingernail, maybe that was the difference. Something seemed off with Steph last night. There was a series there, a sequence in the, I think it was late in the third quarter, where you could see as soon as he released a three-pointer, he went running after his rebound. He knew the shot was off. It seemed like his confidence was shot. How often do you see Curry release a three, and he does his little shimmy on the way back down on defense before the ball even gets to the rim, when it feels good coming out of his hand? Just like you on the golf course, right? It feels good as soon as you make contact with the ball, you're feeling good out there, or you play any sport. If you play pickup basketball, some days it just feels good coming out of your hand, you're confident. Baseball, you're at the plate, you're seeing the ball well. Curry usually, right, it feels good coming out of his hand. Last night, not so much. He was chasing after his own misses. He would do that classic chuck it up and go darting after it right away. And then on the very next possession, he got caught in midair, had to do a jump pass. Right, changed his mind when he went rising up for a three. And then the next time down, he got his three blocked. Something was off with Curry last night. Looked rattled. Looked kind of out of it. But it was okay because Wiggins was able to step up and carry the load. And here's what I find interesting about the Warriors in a moment like this. You have Curry, Klay Thompson, Gary Payton, Andrew Wiggins, all second-generation NBA players. Their fathers all played in the league. You have Steve Kerr, the head coach, played in the league, now coaching. And I look back at some of the great athletes. Kobe Bryant, of course, second generation. In football, who's the best quarterback in the NFL right now? Patrick Mahomes. His father was a professional athlete. Who's the best coach in the NFL? Bill Belichick. His father was a coach. Who was maybe the smartest quarterback of all time? Peyton Manning. His father was a quarterback. Andrew Luck, very cerebral. Number one pick out of Stanford. Was supposed to be the next Peyton before injuries. His father played in the NFL. Major League Baseball, who's the home run leader? Barry Bonds. His father played in the league. Ken Griffey Jr. Nowadays, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was the runner-up for MVP last year at 22. His father was a Hall of Famer. Fernando Tatis, big star. His father played in the league. Cody Bellinger, Rookie of the Year, and then MVP 2 years later. Second youngest MVP in 40 years. His father won a few World Series in the league. Richard Petty has won more Daytona 500s than anybody. Mayweather Jr.'s father was a professional boxer. Floyd Mayweather Jr. is one of the best boxers we've had in quite some time. In my industry, Joe Buck. His father, Jack, was a legendary broadcaster. And by the time Joe was 24, he's doing Super Bowls and World Series and was ready for the moment. And Andrew Wiggins playing in the NBA Finals, kind of like Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, the first time they were there. Now Gary Payton as well. Right, kind of ready for the big spot. You're around the locker room. You're around these professional athletes. You grew up with it. You're on the court in pregame warmups like Tatum's kid this NBA Finals. You grew up in that lifestyle. And when it's time for you to try to step up in those moments, you're ready to go. I grew up in a family. Our family business is insurance. I never worked in insurance, but I got a lot of buddies who do because I grew up in the insurance capital of the United States. And I can talk insurance with some of those buddies, even though I've never worked in it, because I've heard plenty over the years from my family. And if I ever got into insurance, maybe I'd have a leg up on the competition as well. Just like a lot of these athletes, second-generation guys, they're some of the best athletes we've seen. And the Golden State Warriors are being led by 4 second-generation players and a coach who played in the league. They're ready for these moments. Which takes me to this. Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum's favorite player growing up was Kobe Bryant. He wanted to play for the Lakers. His agent didn't want him to go try out because they already had Ingram, and he didn't want Jason Tatum to go to the Lakers. So pre-draft, right, he didn't work out for the Lakers, but that's where he wanted to go. And we've seen him here in the playoffs wear the number 24 armband for Kobe. Sent a text message to Kobe's phone number before the start of the NBA Finals. He has dressed like him in practice during the NBA Finals. His Instagram photo for the last couple years, since Kobe's passing, is the two of them with the same pose. The difference, however, is that Kobe Bryant was relentless. Jason Tatum is not. You can want to be like Kobe Bryant, but you're far from it. Kobe Bryant, his favorite player growing up, right, he modeled his game after Michael Jordan, and he was very similar to Jordan. Was he as good as Jordan? No. But was he as tough to maybe play with or get along with? Yes. Was he as tough on his opponents in the fourth quarter? Yes. Did he want the ball in his hands in the big moments? Of course. Even if you watch their style of play, his style was somewhat, he tried to duplicate Jordan. Certainly with the pull-up jumpers, right off the dribble, in the mid-range. You could see, you could watch Kobe Bryant and have flashes of Jordan. You don't watch Jason Tatum and get flashes of Kobe Bryant. Bryant was big in the big spots. Jason Tatum disappears. His field goal percentage goes down every quarter. In fact, in the fourth quarter of this postseason, he's shooting 24% in the fourth quarter. Steph Curry is averaging more points than Jason Tatum is shooting. Tatum has set the record for most turnovers in the playoffs. And last night, what happened to start the game? He was not ready to go. He had to be benched in the first quarter. Didn't attempt a shot for the first 10 minutes of that game. And while he started to play well at the end of the first quarter into the second, came out in the second half with some big shots to lift the Celtics back, in the fourth quarter, when they needed him most, he was 1-for-5 last night. Had a couple of air balls. He had more air balls than made baskets. You know why the Celtics struggle in the fourth quarter all year long? They were the second worst clutch team this year because their star struggles in those moments. You take on the personality of your star. You go the way of your star. And the fourth quarter is for stars. And that's when those stars need to be their best. In fact, since Kobe Bryant was drafted, going back 26 years ago, no one has more 20-point fourth quarters in the NBA than Kobe Bryant. Nobody scored more in the fourth quarter since he entered the league than Kobe. That's the big difference. Meanwhile, for Jason Tatum, he has more turnovers than baskets in the fourth quarter. And last night was his chance. No Steph Curry, right? Curry was not playing well. Series on the line. We know the winner of Game 5 wins the series about 73% of the time. Here's your chance to step up. Tatum's opportunity to be that star. Their star is not playing well. You have a chance to be that guy. Carry your team to a big win. Because we know the best player on the floor usually wins in the finals. Go back and look historically. Dwayne Wade to Kawhi Leonard to Tim Duncan to Kobe to Jordan to Magic to Bird. All these guys. Giannis more recently. LeBron. Durant and Steph Curry. Usually it's the best player wins the big games. And last night Tatum had every opportunity to be that best player. Steph Curry was invisible for a large portion. And yet Tatum still wasn't good enough. He didn't step up. Instead, you know who did? Andrew Wiggins stepped up. Wiggins was better than Jason Tatum. Tatum was not the best player in that game last night, even with Curry not playing well. Here's Amari Stoudemire this morning talking about Jason Tatum and these struggles in the fourth quarters.
Well, I think he may be a little bit fatigued, but at this point in your season, there's no time for no excuses, right? Either you have it or you don't. You got to dig deep and find that inner strength to get it done. It's interesting to see because he's such a great player, and there's so many intangibles that he has, within his repertoire of his game, of his skill set, that he can bring out that would allow him to be aggressive in the fourth. But I don't see the enthusiasm. I don't see the aggressiveness. I don't see it right now in the fourth quarter, and that's a problem for me.
Yeah, sure is. I think it's a problem for most people on the Celtics side. That's the big difference. Kobe was relentless. He would do his best work in the fourth quarter. He wanted the ball in his hands. Jason Tatum seems to disappear. Tatum's numbers this NBA Finals are about the same as Chris Middleton's a year ago. Were we calling Chris Middleton some sort of star? Or were we saying, he's not good enough to win a Finals as your second best player? Tatum's supposed to be the best player. And you could say, he's too young, right? He's only 24 years old. It's just his first NBA Finals. We got to cut him some slack. Yeah, I could understand that. But Giannis was also in his first NBA Finals a year ago. Michael Jordan won his first Finals and never lost. And you could say, well, those guys were older. Okay, Magic Johnson won his first NBA Finals. He was 20 years old, and he had to play center in the deciding game. And in that game, playing center, he went for 42 points and 15 rebounds, and they won the Finals when he was 20. Larry Bird won his first NBA Finals, averaged almost a triple-double. He was 20. Dwayne Wade won the Finals when he was 24. Much like Jason Tatum. For Wade, it was only his third year in the league. It was his first NBA Finals. He was the MVP, averaged 35 points per game as a 24-year-old playing in his first NBA Finals. Kobe Bryant won his first NBA Finals. By the way, he was only 21. And while he may not have been the best player that series, there was Shaq. He obviously had Phil Jackson coaching the team. Kobe was big time in his second and third Finals. Tatum is only 24. By the time Kobe was 24, he had 3 rings. There's a big difference between these two. Tatum will dress like Kobe. He was his favorite player. He wants to be like Kobe, but he's missing the most important part, that relentless nature at the end of the game. Jordan, Kobe, they wouldn't accept losing. And I'm not telling you that Tatum is accepting losing, but when they need him most, he seems to disappear. In Game 4, when they had a chance to put that series away, he took one shot in the final 7 minutes. Can't happen. You're supposed to be the star. He had 2 baskets in the second half of that game. Last night, 1 basket in the fourth quarter with a series on the line. Not good enough. Now, the good news for Tatum, he has 1 more chance. Game 6 at home. And we know Game 6 against Milwaukee, he was fantastic to keep the Celtics alive. Problem is, I imagine Steph Curry will be pretty hungry in Game 6 because he played so poorly last night. And even if the Celtics win Game 6, they'd then have to come back to San Fran and win Game 7, and I don't think they can do that. The Celtics also haven't been great at home. So even though they're heading home for Game 6, it may not be the safe haven that it's supposed to. But for the Celtics, right, Game 5, you were leading in the second half. Or actually, yeah, both Game 4 and Game 5, you're leading in the third quarter. And you let both games slip away, which is the series. You win Game 4, you win the series. You win last night, you have a pretty good chance of winning the series. And they blew both games in the fourth quarter. And in those fourth quarters, Tatum had 1 basket in the fourth quarter of Game 4, 1 basket in the fourth quarter of Game 5. Kobe may not have always been at his best, like when Ron Artest saved him in Game 7 12 years ago, but you knew he was at least going to go down swinging, and that's the big difference. Kobe is Tatum's favorite player. Tatum wants to be like Kobe, but he's missing the most important part, that relentless nature, that you want the ball in your hands and you're going to attack until the final whistle. All right, Kobe tore his Achilles, still went to the free throw line. He wasn't talking about fatigue. Jason Tatum's got to be better in the big spots if he wants to be like his favorite player. Coming up, we'll power rank quarterbacks in the NFC. Where would Baker Mayfield slot in? Because there are still rumors about Baker joining the NFC. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, who are the best quarterbacks in the NFC? And where would Baker Mayfield slot in? We'll get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Open the show talking about the NBA Finals last night with the Warriors winning Game 5. We know the numbers. When you win Game 5 in a series that's tied at 2, that winner goes on to win the series 73% of the time. You know, what's funny is the Celtics won Game 1. The winner of Game 1 usually wins something like whatever it is, 71%. They won Game 3. I think that's even higher, about 80% of the time. And yet the Warriors are probably going to win this series anyways. So take all these numbers with a grain of salt. It's never 100%. Right? It's only a 71% chance of winning. But Golden State has shown themselves to be the better team, as I expected, over these last 2 games. And I think they closed this thing out. Maybe not in Game 6. Maybe the Celtics are at home. It depends which way they go. Maybe they just quit, they pack it in, or they have some fight in front of the home crowd. And Golden State, we've seen at times, they haven't closed series out on the road. They wait to go back home and do it. But I can't see Boston winning both of these games to steal the finals at this point from Golden State. Actually, sorry, Rick Barry scolded me. I shouldn't say steal anything about the basketball floor, even though there is a stat called steals in basketball. Hey, there's a power ranking. CBS Sports put out their power ranking of quarterbacks in the NFC. Before we get to that list, we have more reports from both Cleveland side and Carolina side about the Panthers trying to get Baker Mayfield. The latest is from Jonathan Jones, who used to cover the Panthers. Now he's just been promoted to the insider, the main guy for CBS Sports. He's their Adam Schefter. And he said there's urgency from the Panthers side to trade for Baker Mayfield soon so he can participate in minicamp. Minicamps are starting all around the league. They're still debating or bickering over Baker Mayfield's salary and how much the Panthers would actually take on. But it seems like they've always been interested. We had reports also from the Cleveland side of things. Cleveland.com reported yesterday as well that the two sides are still talking and have been about a Baker Mayfield trade. And it's a situation where I've been saying all offseason, if you're Carolina, I know you want him here for minicamp because he's going to be learning a new offense. You don't want to just throw him in game one. You know, he just arrived to the team, and he's playing a couple of weeks later. You want him to get comfortable with his teammates. But if you're so hung up on the price, which, by the way, I know there's a whole salary cap in the NFL and everything, although the Rams would tell you that maybe it's a little phony. You have the richest owner in the league if you're the Panthers. They have cap space. If you're that desperate for the quarterback and the quarterback's the most important position, don't you just bite the bullet? Should we really be haggling over a couple million dollars when you're David Tepper and you have money to spend? I know you don't want to handcuff yourself, but it's a one-year deal anyways. At the end of the day, I know you don't want to overpay for a guy, but sometimes that's the cost of doing business if you really are that desperate for a quarterback. But nonetheless, as I've been saying throughout the offseason, if you just wait them out, the Browns eventually are going to have to drop their price. Just like you go to a yard sale as they're shutting down. You see those signs posted throughout the neighborhood. They're having a yard sale, all right, 8 to 11. Show up at 10:55. And as they're packing everything up, or they're just going to have to bring it out to the curb, you could get it pretty cheap. Same idea with Baker. Eventually, the Browns are just going to have to cut him or give him to the Panthers for a better price. But I was thinking about this because I saw this list also put out by CBSSports.com of the top quarterbacks in the NFC. And the NFC, we know, is not nearly as good as the AFC when it comes to quarterback talent. Now, this list was put together by Cody Benjamin for CBS Sports. I don't have any huge issues with the list. His top five is Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Stafford, Dak Prescott, Kyler Murray. After that, in fact, maybe even before that, there's a bit of a drop-off. Kirk Cousins is number six. I don't disagree. But it's not like Kirk Cousins is going to be winning a Super Bowl. Right, the only quarterbacks I think that can actually win a Super Bowl are the three guys that have done it, the first three guys on the list. Dak Prescott, I'd probably agree, is the fourth best quarterback in the NFC. I don't know if he's going to win a Super Bowl, though, in Dallas. Kyler Murray, I don't think he will. I have a lot of concerns about him in Arizona. With that said, I also probably agree, yeah, I'd put him five or six. And then you have Jalen Hurts. Carson Wentz is number eight. Jameis Winston, nine. Trey Lance, 10. If I'm nitpicking, that's one that Trey Lance hasn't played yet. I don't know if I'd put him already at 10th in the NFC. That's followed by Justin Fields, Jared Goff, Daniel Jones, Marcus Mariota, the Falcons quarterback, Geno Smith, Sam Darnold. Now, those three are actually tied. I think that's a little bit of a cop-out. They're all tied for the worst quarterbacks in the NFC. Marcus Mariota, Geno Smith, Sam Darnold. Cody, why don't we organize it, right? Don't just you get to 14 on the list and you throw in the towel. And let's organize those guys. Now, the photos are ranked Mariota, Geno Smith, Sam Darnold. Maybe that's how he would order them, although that kind of defeats the purpose of a tie. But they're all tied for the worst quarterbacks in the NFC. The Falcons quarterback and the Panthers quarterback. That's what we have to look forward to when the NFL comes around here in this part of the country. The two worst quarterbacks in the conference, tied with Geno Smith. A couple of things. He obviously assumes Geno will be the starter in Seattle, and he assumes Trey Lance will be the starter in San Francisco, which then would make Jimmy Garoppolo, we assume, available. Sam Darnold is the worst quarterback in the NFC. Goes along with my point that if you're that desperate for a quarterback and you're David Tepper, maybe you just swallow the bill to upgrade, if you believe it's an upgrade at the quarterback position, to get Baker Mayfield. Before I ask about Baker, Trent, let me ask you first your impressions of this list from Cody Benjamin ranking the top 16 NFC quarterbacks. Any huge issues with his order of the quarterbacks in the NFC?
Besides, you know, mailing it in with 14, 15, 16, come on, Cody, do better here. No, I don't have too many issues. I would say that 11, 12, 13 is very interesting. Actually, 10 through 13 is very interesting because obviously Trey Lance played in two games last year. Justin Fields was banged up the entire season. He also has a horrible roster around him, so we're probably not going to see a lot of production out of him. I'd probably put Jared Goff over the two second-year guys. And potentially even though I'm not a Daniel Jones guy by any stretch of the imagination, I don't think he's a good quarterback, I'd probably put him over those two guys as of right now. Now, that could definitely change this coming season. Trey Lance has all the cards, but he's got a phenomenal roster around him. So he's going to look good with that roster. But no, I don't have any problems. I would say, though, I would probably, and this may just because I'm not a Carson Wentz guy by any stretch of the imagination, I'd probably put Jameis Winston ahead of Carson Wentz as of right now.
Interesting. I wouldn't push back too strong on that. Okay. I'd probably take Carson, but I can understand. At that point, it's almost like picking your poison. Both guys, right? They're both top picks that haven't really worked out.
Not great. Both of them aren't great.
Both turn it over a bunch, you know? It's like, whatever.
I just think more like Jameis could potentially have a lot more success in New Orleans with that team around him than Carson Wentz going to Washington when we don't even know if his best receiver is going to be playing this season because he's holding out.
True. I agree with that. That I'll agree with. And by the way, if you're Terry McLaurin, I know you want the money. Yeah, that's not good for Carson. You're trying to get on the same page with a new quarterback. He's trying to learn his new offense, and his star receiver won't be there this offseason.
I've heard Indy has their big eyes on Terry McLaurin because he went to Indiana. He's from Indiana. And Chris Ballard, you know, he's very frugal with his money. But to get a guy like Terry McLaurin to add to that roster, whew, that might be some problems.
Yeah, look out for my Colts, I'm telling you. I'm also hearing rumors about if DK Metcalf's moved, the Colts could be interested.
They need a – Michael Pittman Jr.? What do you have, 400 yards last year? You know, you need some T.Y. is on the back half of his career. Come on. Like,
goes back to Andrew Wiggins.
Right.
A two versus one. I think Pittman's kind of more of a two. I don't think they have that number one. You bring in a McLaurin, all right, now the whole offense gets better.
Yeah.
Do you think Sam Darnold's the worst quarterback in the NFC?
By far. Yeah, I think by far. And that's, again, no knock. Actually, a knock on Sam Darnold, no doubt about it. But, I mean, I've seen Geno Smith win games for Seattle before. We've seen Marcus Mariota win games when he was in Tennessee and Oakland before. And I've never seen Sam Darnold win games where it matters. So I would probably say that he is right now the worst quarterback in the NFC.
I would probably take him over Geno Smith.
Mm.
And I may take him over Marcus Mariota.
Whoa.
Now, I'm curious. Mariota's gone through this, like, Mitch Trubisky phase, except I give more credit to Mariota, where he went and was a backup somewhere and it, like, raised his stock.
Yeah, no doubt.
And you kind of forget about what he was as a starter in Tennessee. He was a backup in Oakland and then Las Vegas. And for whatever reason, just being over there, and he would fill in, and, you know, he looked pretty good in spot duty. But suddenly it's like, oh, this Mariota guy is intriguing again. I don't think so.
He came in for a quarter for the Raiders, I think, last season, and he looked really good.
Yeah.
And then everybody, like Atlanta, immediately was like, oh, let's go get Mariota back, especially with Arthur Smith. They know each other from, because Arthur Smith was the OC in Tennessee for a while. So I feel like that relationship might be okay.
Yeah, he must like him enough to bring him in. But it's also like, I think back to Matt Flynn when he filled in for Aaron Rodgers and they got a huge contract off of one game as a backup.
Through 400 yards and then just got a $20 million deal.
Matt Castle was a longer sample size, right? But he was a backup, filled in for Brady, and it's like, ooh, we got to make this guy a starter. Similar with Mariota. Now, I know Mariota was once a starter, so it's not the perfect comp to those other guys. But you saw him fill in and with the Raiders and they're like, wow, wait a minute, hold on. This guy may be a lot better now than he used to be. I don't think so. But the whole point of this exercise is because I'm curious, with the NFC not being nearly as good for quarterbacks, say Baker Mayfield is traded to the Panthers today, where on this list would you put Baker Mayfield?
I'd have to put him in front of Trey Lance and Justin Fields because this guy has been to an AFC championship game before. He has won games in the NFL, took the Browns to the playoffs. That's the most important part. And, you know, I'm a Baker supporter. I think he's actually a good quarterback when he's healthy. If he's not healthy, you can just write him off. I'd definitely put him in front of Trey Lance and Justin Fields. Probably put him in front of Jared Goff as of right now and Daniel Jones. I would say he'd be the 10th. If we were talking right now, I think he'd be the 10th best quarterback in the NFC.
Okay, and then you'd have him slotted right behind Carson Wentz and Jameis Winston.
Yes, I don't know about that. That's tough for me to say that Carson Wentz and Jameis Winston are over Baker Mayfield as of right now, because I mean, just the playoff wins and success has been more for Baker Mayfield than those two guys.
I think Baker. Yeah, I think that's the company he would keep. We could debate it, but he'd be somewhere in that 8 to 10 area.
Yeah, I wouldn't put him in front of Jalen Hurts or Kirk Cousins as of right now. I don't believe so.
I wouldn't put him ahead of Kirk. Jalen, I'm kind of out on Jalen, but I don't know. He did get them to the playoffs last year.
You see a picture of him recently? We talked about it a couple weeks ago, these quarterbacks.
He's buff now?
He's yoked. Yeah. I mean, he's about 240 pounds right now. Looking good.
He's going to take some hits. so Baker, I would say somewhere in that area of 7 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
Which speaks to, A, how poor the NFC is in terms of the quarterback depth. The AFC, Baker is not in the 7 to 10 range. He'd probably be towards the bottom. The AFC is a lot better for quarterbacks. And then, B, maybe how important it'd be for Carolina to do this upgrade. Because right now they would have one of the worst. I wouldn't put him at the bottom. Trent would. We could debate about it with Sam Darnold. I wouldn't have him far from the bottom in the NFC. But if you get a Baker Mayfield, we're both in agreement that he'd probably slot right into the middle of the NFC. And that could be good enough for Carolina to be at least maybe in the playoff race. I don't know, competitive. Especially if he's better than Jameis Winston and you have the second-best quarterback in the division. Because he is better than Mariota. I'd rather have him than Sam Darnold at this point. And Winston, we could debate. But if Baker Mayfield comes over to the NFC, yeah, I would probably agree. Somewhere in that 7 to 10 range, I think worthy of a chance for the Panthers to try to take a swing at Baker Mayfield.
It's going to be interesting to see, Luke, with this roster that the Panthers have, because obviously you have DJ Moore, who is a, you know, very productive receiver. He's not a superstar or anything like that, but he's a productive receiver. Robbie Anderson has fallen off over the last couple years. It may just be the quarterback. He hasn't had somebody to throw him the ball because he's had Sam Darnold in both places that he's been, with the Jets and with Carolina now. So if he has somebody to throw the ball, but I just don't see Baker having a ton of success if there's not a lot of weapons around him, because it seemed like in Cleveland he had weapons, especially in the running back position. I mean, he could fault to Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt all day long.
Yeah, I think Baker is a guy that needs enough help around him. Right. Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah always steal their phrase. Is a quarterback, is he the truck or the trailer? Is he pulling the team to victory, or are you kind of pulling him to a victory? And Sam Darnold's one of those guys, too, that he's not going to win on his own. He needs to be surrounded by talent. Meanwhile, like a Patrick Mahomes, I think he can win on his own. Aaron Rodgers, I have felt that way about Russell Wilson in the past. Tom Brady, right, good enough quarterbacks that they don't need the most talented teams in the league. They'll still win. Meanwhile, I think Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Marcus Mariota, those types of guys, they need a lot of talent around them. And then you just hope they don't screw it up. They'll get the job done for you. We'll see if Baker is still making his way to Carolina. But apparently the Panthers have some sort of sense of urgency. They want to try to get this done here soon so we can participate in the offseason. When we come back, speaking of that, five things that need to be figured out or done before we start the NFL season. I'll give you those five next. The Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
I want to stop. Thank you, baby. I want to stop. And thank you, baby. Yes, I do.
How sweet it is to be loved by you.
Feels so fine.
How sweet it is to be loved by you.
I close my eyes at night.
Come on up, the five things that need to be done or figured out before we start the NFL season. I'll rank them for you in just a moment here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734 on the text line. Somebody asked, if the Panthers do get Baker Mayfield, will they then trade Sam Darnold? I just don't know if there's a market for Sam Darnold. I mean, there are plenty of desperate teams out there, which is the reason why Baker will probably wind up somewhere. Maybe Carolina. I don't think the same can be said for Darnold, and there's fewer opportunities. I think you just keep Sam Darnold. Now, as I was saying, for Carolina, I know Baker Mayfield comes with a big price tag. The Panthers have the third most salary cap space. And you have the richest owner. Now, I don't know if they could try to, with this contract you already have, like the way the Rams, you know, the Rams are able to work around some things, and because Les Snead has all sorts of money, and they're willing to spend some of that money. And they turn it into signing bonuses and this and that, and you can get away, you can finagle the cap a little bit. David Tepper can do the same thing. Now, I don't know if it's too late to try to do that with Baker Mayfield's contract at this point, but they still have the third most salary cap space in the league. And Sam Darnold could be a good backup with Baker. They could compete in the offseason, and then, you know, knock on wood, you hope there's no injury. But if there is, Sam Darnold's a solid backup instead of what would be like a P.J. Walker. So if I'm Carolina and I go and get a Baker, I'm probably keeping both guys. They both will be free agents at the end of the year as well. But that takes me to this. I was thinking about this as we get ready for the NFL season, a couple of months away. We still have some important things that need to be sorted out. So I rank the top five things, the five biggest storylines that we still need to figure out before the start of the NFL season. And let's get to them now with our tasty top five.
This is a tasty burger.
It's the tasty top five.
I'm tasty.
Number five.
The Steelers quarterback situation. Will Kenny Pickett start week one? Kenny Pickett is the only rookie that we could see right away, and he'll be competing with Mitch Trubisky. So not really the most daunting task for Pickett in Pittsburgh. But when we look at these quarterbacks, he may be the only guy that has these franchise quarterback expectations. Will he start right away? Will he sit most of this first year? Will they ease him in? I'm curious to see what the Steelers' plan is at the quarterback position, and I think clarity will be important. We may not get that clarity until preseason, and you actually see them play in some live reps. But Kenny Pickett, I put at number five. It's not the most important thing, but what are the Steelers going to do at the quarterback position? Will we see one of these rookie quarterbacks start right away? And Pickett's the only guy that went in the first two rounds, so he's the best candidate to start immediately. Will the Steelers do that, or will they ease him in and use Trubisky instead? Number four, I'll say DK Metcalf. We could also throw Terry McLaurin in there now because he's holding out with the Washington Commanders. But Metcalf, same idea with Seattle. Now, I understand why DK would be unhappy or why he would be doing this. He is set to hit the market a year from now, and what do they just do? They replace Russell Wilson with Drew Lock and or Geno Smith. So if I'm Metcalf, I'm thinking, well, my production, right? I better strike while the iron is hot because my production is about to tank. A wide receiver, you can only do so much because you're dependent on your quarterback. And plus, with Russ gone, you get rid of this let Russ cook storyline. Pete Carroll, at heart, is a defensive guy. He wants to run the football. And so I don't know how many even opportunities you'll have for a Metcalf compared to years past when they were probably throwing it more than they're going to. Granted, they will be trailing, so they'll have to throw it a lot. But if I'm Metcalf, I get it. I usually don't like guys holding out like this before their contract, but look, the Seahawks changed the circumstances for you. It'd be like you at your job when you had an assistant or you had a coworker that was working hand-in-hand with you, or you had maybe like a secretary, and the company gets rid of them, and they don't replace them, and now they ask you to do more. You go to the boss and say, all right, that's fine, but shouldn't I be getting paid a little? You just made my life harder. Shouldn't you pay me a little bit more for that? And that's kind of Metcalf. Saying like, all right, I mean, if I stay here, you're going to have to pay me more. Because you just replaced my quarterback, Russell Wilson, a Hall of Famer, with Drew Lock and Geno Smith. Either trade me to a better quarterback or pay me more to have to deal with this. So in this case, I actually get DK Metcalf's side and why he would want more money or a trade. Number three, as we were just talking, the Baker Mayfield situation. This needs to be sorted out by the time the season starts. Now, I thought if, you know, both sides could be adults, the Browns could be better suited to keeping Baker around. And Baker could be victorious as well because he could try to, you know, use it as an audition. I do think Deshaun Watson will be suspended. More on that in a moment. I don't know if Deshaun will even be available at all this year. So if you're the Browns, wouldn't you like to still have Baker start one more year? And if you're Baker Mayfield, wouldn't you like that tryout on a pretty good team heading into free agency to get a better contract a year from now? But I think we're too far gone at this point that relationship cannot be repaired. And so if you're Cleveland, you got to, by the time week one starts, Baker can't be on your roster. So you got to figure this out. Are you just going to cut him? Are you going to trade him? Who are you going to trade him to? That's number three of the storylines that need to be figured out before we start the NFL season. Number two, similar, it's Jimmy Garoppolo. Most people assume Trey Lance will be the starter. And if you're going to start Trey Lance, Jimmy, don't keep him as a backup. You might as well get rid of him. So where is he going to go? A lot of people point to Seattle. That would make maybe DK Metcalf happy. But what are the Niners going to do with Jimmy Garoppolo? And San Francisco's in a little bit of a different spot than Cleveland. Cleveland has the second most salary cap space. San Francisco has the third fewest salary cap space. And the way these contracts work, they'll actually get salary cap relief by releasing Jimmy. The Browns, not so much. They'll take a dead cap hit from Baker, right? It's not to their advantage to release Baker. To the Niners, financially, it's kind of to their advantage to just release him. So if we get to a point where they can't trade him and we're heading into the season and they say, yeah, we're going to start Trey Lance, you might as well release Jimmy Garoppolo. Where's Jimmy going to be this football season? That's number two on my list. And obviously number one of the things that most need to be figured out before we can start this NFL season, it's of course Deshaun Watson. This is the biggest story in terms of the off-the-field stuff this offseason. In terms of connecting the dots or these storylines, of trying to get some clarity, getting a resolution to some of these questions we've been wondering all offseason. Deshaun Watson, what does his immediate future hold with the Browns and the NFL? Is he going to be suspended? Is he going to be able to play at all? Is he going to lose some of these lawsuits, right, be punished even outside of the NFL? Is more coming down? What is going to happen with Deshaun Watson? That's the number one story. And I think the longer it drags on, the worse it appears for the NFL. Make your decision. And as I said before, in regards to the PGA Tour, you can always peel back the punishment. Just like if you're a parent, right? You can always unground your kid. That's a lot easier, letting him off the hook a little bit after grounding him for a few days, as opposed to trying to place a punishment on him a couple weeks later. Well, remember when you did this last month? Yeah, now you're grounded, right? That doesn't work so well. Same idea here. Come down hard. There's an appeal process. You can always peel it back. We still have 3 months to go. But I think if optically, it looks worse and worse when the NFL is just sitting there. Deshaun Watson begins minicamp today with the Browns, and we're getting more lawsuits. I just think it's not great optically. We have to get some sort of clarity here. That's the biggest thing to be sorted out before the start of the NFL season. When we come back along those lines, another day and more bad news for the Deshaun Watson camp. We'll get to that next. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Wrapping up hour one of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Another day and more bad news for Deshaun Watson's camp, at least on the surface, as two more women have come forward with lawsuits. One of them was passed off to Houston attorney Tony Busby by an Atlanta law firm. So if this woman's based in Atlanta, that's somebody in another state now getting involved. And another woman was coming forward after seeing the that HBO Real Sports episode about a week or two ago. And she watched the episode and was compelled to come forward, which will be the 26th lawsuit against Deshaun Watson. This was first reported last night by the aforementioned Jonathan Jones had that report. Now, Deshaun is speaking to the media currently for the first time since he signed his contract, his introductory press conference with the Browns. So this is the first time in about 3 months he's speaking to the media. I'm actually surprised. I don't know if it's an obligation because minicamp begins today. I don't know if they had to make Deshaun available. But I'm surprised that he actually is facing the questions from the media for the first time in 3 months. I'm sure we'll get some sound from that, if not today, probably on the show tomorrow. But I saw this quote from Josina Anderson where Deshaun Watson said, "This is going to be my home for my career." And he thanked the media and asked for respect for the legal proceedings ahead. I imagine you won't get too much from Deshaun when it comes to that stuff, but there are now more women have joined in. We have 26 lawsuits. The number keeps going up with Deshaun Watson. And we'll see. We continue to wait and see what will come from the NFL, if anything. But as the days move on, every day it seems like more potentially troubling news for Deshaun Watson and his camp and all this. And meanwhile, he begins minicamp with the Browns today. When we come back, hour two, we'll get to our taste test. Plus, which team could potentially end Clemson's home winning streak this year? We'll do that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.